Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode something of
five, maybe. No, maybe. It can't be five.
Four. How many have we done?
This is our third show.
We've done.
Yes, there must be five.
It's five. Hello.
Wow, already.
The exact number of Thunderbirds. This is Simcast. Right, yeah. Hello.
Hello.
God, it's happened already. It's Thursday night. It's still raining. God, blimey, heck. This is not snow. I don't know. I say at least it's not snow. I wanted snow. I didn't get snow.
Did you not get any? We got loads.
Actually, that's not really true. I did get snow, but it didn't settle.
Ah.
So it kind of snowed, but it's like it's just dandruff.
Yeah.
It's not really doing anything. Pointless. Something that we keep forgetting to do, of course, because obviously we are now the Simcast. So, if you want to contact us, a few people have already started, but please feel free to drop us a tweet at our new and shiny Twitter thing.
Page? Account?
Yeah.
Thing?
Whatever. At our new funky new Twitter land, Twitter sphere thingy. At Simcast Radio, all one word. And please do use the hashtag Simcast Radio. Or Simcast RSL. Is it Simcast Radio or Simcast RSL? I can't remember what decided.
It's hashtag Simcast RSL.
There we go. That's why we keep Jordan around, for the professionalism, unless he wants to call me names again.
You brought it up first.
Everybody found it hilarious, even I did.
So if I'm suddenly Jordan, anyway.
No.
Let's not get that on a t-shirt.
No. There isn't a t-shirt for me. Well, there is. No, there isn't a t-shirt for me. Just shush.
I didn't say anything.
No. Oh, goodness me. Right. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've got real racing happening again as well now. We've got real racing happening in the States, obviously, because you have Daytona, both versions. And was it the Daytona 500?
I would say it was on Sunday, but for me it was until 5:30 in the morning.
Oh, because of rain.
Because of rain. Mm-hmm. And I stayed up.
You're an idiot.
And that was something.
It was like, because obviously I've seen the incidents. I mean, that was public lobby stuff.
At the beginning, yeah, that was just, yeah, wrecking on lap 14 of a 200 lap race. That wasn't the smartest thing I've ever seen. And the problem with that is, as Daytona always happens, if you have a big wreck early on, everybody calms down and does nothing for the rest of the race. So, and until the last lap, and then they all implode again. So, yeah, it wasn't a bad race. It just wasn't a great one. So.
Can't help but feel that they build NASCAR up with so much pre-race fluff, and then it's just kind of a bit a damp squib.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was all right.
In this household, we do motorsport and we do rugby, and we go to both. And it's really interesting because, like, when you go to you haven't been really to a big rugby match, have you? You just talk about
no, it. Not yet. I will be going to a Wales match at some point.
Good. Autumn Internationals, they'll be releasing the tickets in about 2 months.
I will bear that in mind.
Anyway, what was I saying? So, when you go to a big rugby match, either a big rugby match or just a Prem rugby match, whatever, you have all the build up, and you build up, and it all sort of like starts to build up until just before kickoff, and then the big kickoff crescendo, and then everyone goes quiet, as they start playing, and that's kind of like, oh, okay. But in motorsport, it's the other way around, because you kind of, not a lot happens for everything, and then the race kind of starts, and everyone's like, oh my god, for like 6, 12, 24 hours. And I quite like that.
Yeah.
I've got a nice healthy mix of both things. Wow, that was a fun way of wasting 5 minutes. I'm just happy because I'm going to have new wheels in my life soon. That's never a bad thing. Oh, that's a point. I know they talked about it last week. I'm not going to say the R word because that will take us down a avenue I don't wish to go down, particularly with you.
I'm just trying desperately to think of what that is.
It's what people who play Skyrim are called. Anyway.
Carry on, I'm lost.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, that new Thrustmaster wheel.
Mmm. Yes.
Definitely has an LCD screen.
Uh-huh.
And interesting, I don't think they touched on it, but interestingly, when someone put that on the official Fanatec Facebook page and went, hey, Fanatec, you know, what have you got? And they kind of put up a reply that was very much nudge, nudge, wink, wink sort of thing.
So they're working on a...
They're working on one with LCD something. Screen. Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me when you consider that Fanatec are like the partners of the F1 Esports series, and the wheels don't look like Formula One wheels. Like, they do in like silhouette, but...
They look like older Formula One wheels.
They do, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that they're looking into making a Formula One replica, and that's what I think the Thrustmaster wheel is. I think that will be like the updated version of the F1 Ferrari wheel replica. It will just be a like last year's Ferrari or something like that. So I will absolutely be getting that when it comes out.
That said, there are some very good, like, you know, like indie wheels that are compatible
you mean like
with
Simicube and stuff.
No,
like
not
that.
Even not even that big. There are like, you know, people who produce replica wheels for the 911 RSR, among other things, and that has the full LCD layout. It's a full-on replica, you know, full LCD panel, the works, and you can buy that. And of course, if you've got a podium hub, it will work with that. I think if you've got Simicube or you know some of the other types of direct drive options out there, it'll work with those as well through various means. Very tempting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although. Although, you and I both do VR, don't we?
We do. Yeah, so we spend all this money to get replica wheels, and then we put a huge box on our face, so we can't see it anymore.
No. Although, what's not... Because I was sort of thinking about this. If you do any, like, the bigger endurance races on, like, VCO or iRacing officially or whatever, this is just me being an old man... Because I have old man eyes now, apparently. One thing lockdown has done for me is it made my vision worse. I need new glasses anyway, but I go out for work and I do my worky type thing. Out and about, away from my actual office, and I have to look at things. If I look at things in distance now, or in height, actually, at a certain height now, I can't bloody read it. It's nuts. But I was reading a report that actually said that since lockdown, because so many people are having significantly more screen time than pre-lockdown, people's eyesight is actually getting worse. So you have to try and do this. I think they said it's a 20-20-20 split. So you have to you can spend like 20 minutes looking directly at the screen, 20 minutes looking at like a medium distance thing. So I guess you just put your laptop by a window. And then 20 minutes completely away from your screens to try and let your eye muscles recover.
Apparently. It's far too much effort for me.
And there's us putting a screen literally millimetres from
our
face.
Yeah, literally. And put strapping a TV to our faces. Right?
Yeah.
Logic.
Yeah.
I don't need glasses now, but I know I'm damn well going to need
them too. Although, actually, I'm sure you'll say... because of the way the depth perception works in VR, if you're on, like, say, the Hangar Strait, your eyes are probably looking. They're not looking at the screen particularly. They are looking, you know, down and into the distance because of the depth perception. Yeah. I don't know. I suppose that would work. Maybe we should all be working in VR. That way I can do my work and then just go and literally just look up for a couple of minutes. You know, at some point at Silverstone, a million miles, you know, down the road or whatever, and then look back down again. I don't know. What were we talking about? I've forgotten. Screen time.
Yeah, the Thrustmaster.
Oh, yeah, the Thrustmaster, yes. No, I think that looks really good.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I will absolutely get that as soon as it... I believe they've said April? It's coming out in April.
Mm.
So, yeah, I will... I'll have to do a product review or something.
Yeah, I'm
fun.
Yeah. Product reviews, there's something that we can do now.
Yeah, it'd be even better if companies sent them to us for free.
So yeah, Fanatec / Thrustmaster / Cinecube / Asher.
Mad Cats, I don't know.
Oh, God. Does that even exist? That doesn't exist anymore.
That's one for the people who said we should go back and look at past stuff. What's your favourite? What was your first wheel?
I actually think a Mad Cats wheel was my first. I think I had was it a 360 Modena wheel I might have had?
Do you remember Xbox for the 360 brought out a wireless steering wheel?
Yeah, it was awful. I never actually
It was like the U shape, and then it had the triggers on the back, and you held it in the air, and then it used a gyro. Yeah. I had that.
I didn't think much.
Bloody awful.
I didn't think much of their official like wheel either. It was pretty.
Oh, I had that. That was all right. It wasn't. It was all right for oval racing on Forza 4.
Yeah.
But that was about it.
It's probably literally the only wheel that was properly set up to do Forza.
Yeah. Sadly.
Yeah. I'm perfectly happy with my little collection now. Thank you very much.
Yes. Same. All I need is that new one. So I'm looking forward to that. That'd be good. Should we get on to this week's news?
Yes, I guess we probably should.
What have we got first?
I don't know. You tell me, because I haven't seen it.
Well, let's start. Have you not looked at my handy document that I've made?
I haven't looked at your document, no.
How dare you? I spent so much time on
that. I know.
You
know me. I like to fly by the seat of my pants.
That's one way to put it. Let's. I suppose we should get British
slowly
GT
and on
out,
fire,
shall we? The British GT DLC,
which I still haven't tried yet.
Have you not tried it yet?
No.
What are you doing?
I literally don't know. And I've posted this on British GT channels, and I've said this was the content I bought Assetto Corsa Competizione for.
And you still haven't bloody.
And I still haven't bought it yet.
You haven't even bought it?
I was hoping someone might give it to us, but no.
Well, I think they only gave British GT, what, 4 codes or something like that, so I don't think they were going to give it to us, were they?
No, no. I haven't... God, this is the first time I've been on the PC since last week.
Wow.
I've had life to do.
Well, I suppose I won't shock you. I say that the British GT DLC pack is outstanding.
It certainly looks it.
As the guys mentioned on the show last week, it finally was announced, and it was released just before, or I think it was just after they did the show, so they couldn't, they could only tell you guys the details of what was in it and not actually give you a reaction, so they left it to us, or rather me, because Matt still hasn't played it.
I've watched videos.
But for those who weren't listening last week, for some reason, the British GT DLC packet, the highlights include Snetterton, Donington, and why am I going blank? Alton Park, coming to Assetto Corsa Competizione. Basically, the final three tracks needed to be able to run a full British GT calendar on Assetto Corsa Competizione.
Mm-hmm.
It also included, I think it was over 40 different liveries and 70 different drivers. Including 2020 ones, which was great. Obviously, there was a little bit of bias, as we were all very happy to see a certain Century Motorsport livery.
Yeah.
With a certain logo just behind.
I'd have been even happier if the GT4, sorry, if the GT3 had had it as well.
That would have been cool. Yeah.
But
hopefully they add that in the future. Like they might do a 2020 update or something like that for some of the liveries. That'd be nice.
Well, I'm trying to think what's on there. It's mostly McLaren's, I think, that have got their 2020. Oh, and the GTC Team Parker Racing Porsches are in there.
Yes, you're right. And yeah, of the McLarens, the main highlight obviously is the RJN team.
Yeah, James Baldwin and Jenson Button's both their cars are in.
Yes.
I think one of the Bentleys is as well.
I think so. I have
driven literally. They haven't. It hasn't.
Really up and out.
No. Oh, and two C's, obviously.
Yes. Yes.
Who have swapped to Mercedes?
I saw that, and doesn't the car look really, really gorgeous? Nice. I do like the two C's liveries, and that I'm unashamedly the Mercedes is my favourite GT3 car. So that is I love that.
I want some more love for the NSX. I really want an NSX racing in the British GTs.
That'd be cool.
That'd be good.
But yes, so as you would expect, we're given Assetto Corsa Competizione's track record, excuse the pun, track record for extraordinarily good track modelling. Many, including people who have driven the real tracks, have said that the versions of Alton Park, Snetterton and Donington are the best iterations of those tracks in any sim.
Donington in particular, because they've done a reasonable amount of sort of paddock based work there to some of the buildings and everything, and all of that is realised. It looks absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I've never been to Alton Park. Obviously Snetterton is my home track. I've been there more than any other track in the country, and that looks absolutely phenomenal. It is incredible how accurate that is.
I'd really like to go to Alton, actually. That's the only one I've not been to.
Yeah, that is the next on my bucket list. Everyone says that is the most beautiful track in terms of like the track layout and the surroundings. It's just gorgeous. I'd love to go there.
There aren't many circuits that have a lake that, well, not so much now, but not that long ago, cars could actually end up in.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other one. Maybe Mallory.
Oh yeah, Mallory.
Anglesey, you could end up in the sea. Pembury,
you'd have to go some though, mate.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, with enough effort, anything's possible. If they let me have a go, I'm sure I could. With enough effort, anything's possible.
Castlecombe, Castlecombe, you used to be able to end up in the middle of a cornfield, but you could do that at Snetterton.
You can't do it in the sim, though. I was really disappointed because they put up a bloody chain link fence separating you from the cornfield in the sim. That ain't there in real life. I was extraordinarily disappointed.
So cornfield based fun, you can. That sounds wrong.
All right, Teresa.
Oh God!
You mischievous person, you. That's why you haven't been.
We're
on
not going down that
track yet. You've been playing in the wheat fields.
Jeez, it was so naughty. God. Anyway, politics. What was I going to say? Where you could deposit cars in cornfields in real life? Snetterton, Croft. Used to at Castlecombe, not so much now.
Thruxton.
No.
No, it wasn't a cornfield, it was just a huge load of trees.
Yeah, it was a copse.
Yeah.
And then someone's back garden.
Yeah. Probably it for cornfields that you can end up.
I think so. But that's probably 300% more cornfields than you should end up in.
I was really disappointed with Snetterton, though, in particular, because my brother told me that back when he was karting, they did an event at Snetterton, and somebody went off there, and that they left their cart on the outside of turn one, and it took them about half an hour to find it because the corner was over.
You can't do it. The reason I say you can't do it at Castlecombe now is because there's a bloody great big solar panel wind farm, solar energy farm thing there now.
So you can't end up in a cornfield, but you can remove power for the local community.
There's a lot of there's a lot of ramps.
Oh, nice. There you go. That's what you could probably end up in the sea then. It doesn't don't know how
it does
far
make
away.
The photography, it does make the photography very, very different. I'll give them this.
But anyway, yes, moving back to ACC, I think the best thing, probably the best thing of all, for me at least, other than the tracks, because the tracks are absolutely phenomenal, the best thing is that the British GT pack allows people to race multi-class.
Yay!
In and that is fantastic, because previously you could, but you had to go online. And it seemed like a bit... I know this, the when they added GT4, the series that were in the game technically didn't have multi-class running. But it seemed a bit silly to have everything you needed to do multi-class and not let us do it. You don't have to be that accurate. So, yeah, for those of you like myself who were disappointed not to be able to do multi-class before, now you can. And I've tried it, and it is brilliant. It is really good. I think, from my experience at least, the AI, the GT3 AI, aren't that clever when it comes to negotiating them. Obviously, you will gain more time than them, but they're not bad.
That's pretty accurate then.
Yeah.
They're not bad. So GT4 drivers would have me believe.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, yeah, that's the main takeaway from me. The tracks are the obvious highlight, but a close second is the fact that we can now do that GT4 multi-class racing, and it's really good. I'd probably give the pack a 9 out of 10 if it let me go in that cornfield at Snetterton. That'd probably be 10. It's only $12.99 as well. That is incredible value for everything that you get.
It is. And if I remember correctly, even if you don't buy it, if you've got the original GT4 pack, you will have access to the British GT GT4 liveries.
Oh, really? Okay. Apparently. So, I assume you probably wouldn't therefore be able to do the multi-class racing, but you would have the British GT liveries.
Yes, you'd have the liveries, but that would be it.
Okay.
But you want the whole thing. Really.
But at $12.99, yeah, you just get it. It's so good. When you consider that you're getting three unbelievable tracks, loads of liveries, and the ability to do single player multi-class for less than the price of one iRacing track. It's a done deal. A done deal. And having raced Snetterton on iRacing, I'm comfortable with saying that the Assetto Corsa Competizione version of Snetterton is better. Same with Donington. Same with Alton. Same with all of them. Assetto Corsa Competizione, their main strength for me is just how bloody brilliant the tracks are.
And also how up to date they are.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm also led to believe that those versions of those tracks in iRacing aren't all that new.
Oh, Snetterton is quite old, you can tell. It's quite old. But I guess that's the positive of being able to focus on one facet of racing, whereas with iRacing, obviously their focus is with America. Although we are getting Knock Hill soon, that'd be cool.
Which I still find weird.
It was a pipe dream for me. I was thinking, I'd love to have Knock Hill, can you imagine? And then they announced it.
But if you were going to... But do you know what I mean? If you were going to add any circuit from the UK that isn't currently in iRacing into iRacing, that isn't...
No, I'd have gone with either Thruxton or Croft.
I'd have said Thruxton.
Yeah.
Because Thruxton is kind of like a much faster Lime Rock.
I think I get what you mean, yeah.
You know, there's not tons of pass. If you're going to pass, you're going to have to really think about it. And
I guess Knock Hill is kind of like that, though, as well.
No, there's way more passing at Knock Hill. Okay. Lime Rock is like Knock Hill because if you make a mistake, it's going to be a big accident you have. Yeah? And there's probably 1, 2, 3, 4 passing places at Knock Hill. And at Lime Rock, there's 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 if you're ballsy. If you're ballsy. At Thruxton, there's 1, 2, 3 if you're ballsy. 4, possibly 5 if you're not worried about damaging your suspension. Because I still maintain you can pass going into the club chicane, and if you're really lucky, you might be able to swing a pass on the exit of the club chicane, but you're going to be naughty doing it. and the other driver's not going to like you very much. You're not going to make a Christmas card list.
That
but
doesn't matter.
You can't actually, no, there is five because you can pass into turn one. Actually, yeah. Thinking about it. Yeah. So, but yeah. So two very different circuits, kind of like Lime Rock in very, very different ways. We've learned nothing from this. Other than the fact we'd really like to, because let's face it, realistically, the next time we're going to have Thruxton in an official game is a BTCC one, which may or may not be any good.
Yes, I really hope that is.
I do. I'm also hoping, speaking of hoping that games are going to be really good, that the, because obviously we were talking about this prior to coming on, when the WRC license goes to Codemasters, nay EA, I really hope that that is on the Dirt 3.0.
Yeah, we can probably talk about this in a bit because that kind of comes up later.
I wouldn't know. I would know. I've not seen the show run, so.
So unprofessional. just before we move on from Assetto Corsa Competizione, we also had a little bit of news. Shortly after the British GT pack release, that Assetto Corsa Competizione will be coming to PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X at some point this year.
That's going to be beautiful.
That is really good news. I don't know whether it will be at the same level as the PC version, because I still am of the belief that the new gen consoles aren't quite on par with a good PC.
Looking over at mine, I'm like, no, it's not.
But it certainly will be an upgrade, because I know there were a lot of people that were disappointed with the compromises that had to be made for the last gen version of Competizione. So
it's mainly frame rates, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I think, what is it, locked to 30?
Something like that.
Which just isn't good enough for a current game. So yeah, I think the new generation technology will allow the game to run a lot happier and a lot more at the level that people would expect. There's no details on when we can expect this version. They've said 2021, so knowing most game developers, that'll be December. probably the 31st. Probably at 11:59. And there was a little bit more news as well, as with the Assetto Corsa franchise recently passing €100 million in sales. That's across Assetto Corsa Competizione and Assetto Corsa,
which in itself is pretty stunning, considering it's a six-year-old game.
Yeah, and considering that both games I would consider more on the niche scale for sim racing. You know, it's not like an F1 or something like that, a big title.
I think
it just shows how the name is gaining more and more traction, if you'll excuse the pun.
But I think also the, as we sort of said, Assetto Corsa is almost this generation's R factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Insofar as it does everything, it the sandbox element of Assetto Corsa is so brilliant. And I mean, I've got everything from, you know, like Legends all the way through to classic Le Mans cars, current Formula One cars, IndyCar, touring cars, and rally cars, and everything in between. Somebody's even trying to make bikes work on it.
Interesting.
I've seen a video of them riding it, and it looks brilliant. I'm flabbergasted at the lengths people are going to make Assetto Corsa be amazing. Sorry.
No, I hadn't heard of that. I'll have to give that a look. You mentioned R Factor. That's a nice little segue. We should talk about a recent smallish update to R Factor 2. The highlight of which being a updated version of Indianapolis, which is I'll always take that because I do like Indianapolis, both the oval and the road course. Indianapolis 2020 V1.06. Catchy. Basically, graphical overhaul, sponsorship. Brought up to 2020 specs and stuff like that at the side of the track and all of that kind of thing. It's really good. I tried it earlier in the week and it's, as you would expect with R Factor 2 tracks, very good. There was also a number of bug fixes, as we usually expect. Nothing too major, though. Just UI changes and cloud glitches and stuff like that. So, yeah, definitely head over to R Factor 2 and try out the new Indianapolis. Another little bit of R Factor 2 news came in the form of BMW committing even further to sim racing.
Go on.
Of all the manufacturers we've seen, it seems BMW are the ones that are throwing their hat furthest into the ring. Obviously, we've seen like the partnership with the Fanatec wheel that you can take off the car and put on your sim rig and stuff like that. Now, BMW have confirmed that their engineers, their performance engineers, will be helping the BMW Motorsport sim racing teams. I believe they're partnered with Redline. And another one that I don't remember, because of course Redline are in there, to help their drivers with stuff like energy management in Formula E and the attack mode and how to utilize it properly.
That's brilliant.
It's just a further underlining, as if we needed any more examples of how some manufacturers are taking sim racing so seriously. And it's really impressive to see that they're going to that level. And when you see the you mentioned it when we were talking about this before the show, the way that you have to drive the Formula E car in R Factor 2 is very different to anything else. Like every sim has its little niches and different ways that you have to extract performance out of it. But I think when you've got Formula E, which is such a different kind of motorsport, and the focus is on energy management, it'll be interesting to see if that makes a big impact. Having driven the Formula E car, I haven't driven it in the sim, obviously. I haven't driven it to an extent where I could tell whether the energy management was right, but it'll be interesting to see if what comes from this is a more realistic energy management model. Because I think sim racing at the moment, it's more, you know, attacking every single lap more than anything. So it'll be interesting to see if they can bring in sort of the nursing of the car and all of its components.
Well, I also think, because it's proving to be a useful tool for real drivers in the off-season, perhaps more so in the last 12 months, they need it to be at that level.
Yeah.
If that is something that filters down quickly to, you know, mere mortals such as ourselves, speaking purely for myself, of course, suddenly Jordan, I think it's a fascinating thing. I mean, we saw it with iRacing, you know, we saw, you know, the quick inclusion of track changes and the aero screen in, for the IndyCar, and obviously the track changes mainly for NASCAR at Daytona. And that filtered down to us really, really quickly. I think it was, the week before the race at Daytona, they had that set up.
Yeah, literally the days leading up to, you had the NASCAR drivers jumping on iRacing because there was no practice, to no practice in real life. So,
and if you think most of these race teams, if they have sim setups, they'll be centrally located at wherever they're based. You know, countries like the UK still have lockdowns, which means essential travel only. I can't imagine a driver, you know, heading off down, you know, for a 50-100 mile drive down to their team facility just so they can jump on a sim for a few hours necessarily qualifies.
I think technically that would be allowed depending on the championship. If it falls under elite sport, then I reckon they would. I think they're allowed, because that's why the Formula One teams are still allowed to operate at their factories.
Fair point.
So that might be. But for the lower series that aren't classed as elite sports for some reason, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so actually it's hugely beneficial for everybody for the titles to be as realistic as possible. And also, if you think about it from a broadcasting standpoint, with, you know, a greater onus on pro level sim racing exploits pre season and post season now, they need it to look and feel and drive as accurately as possible so that the people viewing it, be they real racing fans of that series who are watching it so that they've got something to watch that resembles what they're used to, or us sim racing fans, because obviously we kind of fall into the middle of both camps, can watch and go, yeah, no, that looks really good. It's why I can't watch the Formula One stuff.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it, like, it, it's on surface value, it's kind of entertaining because, you know, there's overtaking and stuff like that, and it's a bit mad, but I'm under no illusion that it is a sim.
Yeah.
Because of how it looks and how everything reacts, how the cars react to each other.
Well, how the cars react to bumps is unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not right. And the sound glitches that are still there, which is shocking to me. Whereas, as we've spoken a lot about before, with the iRacing events that we had, particularly the V8 Supercar and the IndyCar ones and the NASCAR ones, me, somebody who is fully immersed in sim racing, and I'm on iRacing so much, I was fooled into thinking it was real at points. It's incredibly impressive what some sims have been able to accomplish, and R-Factor 2 as well should go into that list, because the Le Mans event last year looked incredible.
It did, especially at night. And I think night on sim racing is still something that is close.
Some sims do it right. Some sims haven't gotten anywhere close yet. And you've been saying to me for a while to try Le Mans at night on R-Factor 2. Mm. And I did the other day. And yeah, that is really impressive how they've managed to capture the atmosphere of night racing.
It's funny because I think we also said this off air. You do that on a screen and you kind of go, oh yeah, this looks all right, you know, yeah, the light's playing nicely and it all looks great. But then do the same in VR and all of a sudden it's a complete new visceral experience. I've never experienced anything that good in VR. It's so impressive. And yeah, this weekend I should be doing it again. If I can get my head around the UI, but I think this is something, you know, you said it yourself when you were on midweek the other week. You know, we saw the exponential growth after COVID kind of hit last year, and I think what we're seeing now is the natural progression of that, which probably shouldn't have happened for another 12 months. Which in itself is quite interesting. So, but it's I think sim racing's in a really good place, and the fact that we've got a show, you know, we're doing a show like this on a major, platform, kind of says it all, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should probably move on, shouldn't we? Because we have to talk about something that we briefly touched on, WRC9.
Yes, WRC9, a new DLC pack has released.
Oh.
Or has it? The FIA Rally Star DLC has been released.
Right.
And I think the best way for me to describe this, and this is from reactions I've seen from people who play a lot more of WRC, mainly because they can get the game to actually work with their steering wheel, but that's a personal problem. This pack is not for people, like casual players of this game. Many people have actually said that you should only get this DLC if you are seriously good at the game, like you are interested in taking it to an esports level, like top 1% of players kind of level. Because essentially all this DLC pack adds, it adds some new rally stages, it adds a new car, but that content is only accessible within the FIA Rallystar portion of the game.
Oh.
And you can only do that because it is essentially a tournament. This is essentially a qualifying event for an esports tournament, if I'm reading it correctly. And yes, you can't access any of this content outside of that mode. So it seems a little strange, and they don't really mention this a lot in any of the marketing for it, which is a little bit suspect, because it does cost a little bit of money. It's not a lot, but yeah, it's an odd one. I don't know why they didn't allow these rally stages in the new car to be available in single player. That seems a bit strange. And what's more, this esports tournament is also age restricted to people between the ages of 17 and 26.
Oh, that's me out then.
Yeah, I believe you can take part in the qualifying event, but if you were to somehow qualify, you couldn't go anywhere because they'll only allow you to take part if you're age 17 to 26, which is odd. It's just a bit of a strange one, really. The car that they've added is the Ford Fiesta M Sport Rally 3. and they've added 12 time-limited events at 12 courses that have not previously appeared in WRC 9. Once each event opens up, there's a limited amount of time where you can take part in this event, and you can only have 100 attempts at it. So it's all time-limited content. It's restricted to only this tournament. And, yeah, it just seems a little bit odd. I don't know, like, fair enough if you're going to do this tournament, but at least allow people who aren't going to take part, don't want to, or aren't eligible to play it in single player. It's a bit strange.
Not sure about that.
Yeah.
No.
A little bit odd.
I mean, mate, don't get me wrong, amazing title, though. I really like WRC 9.
I'm trying, I can't really comment on it because I've had so many problems with trying to set up my wheel. My major complaint with this game is that it's yet another sim racing title in 2021 that has a needlessly complicated wheel setup. Like, why do you need to assign left and right individually on your steering wheel? Why can't you just have what iRacing has? Have your wheel, turn it full lock, turn it back, turn it 90 degrees. It knows where you're going.
I can only assume WRC 9 is probably one of those titles that is the reverse of most other titles, whereby it was designed for a console and they've ported it to PC.
I think you're right with that. That does make a lot of sense.
Based on the recommendation of one of our favourite streamers, I am going to be picking up Richard Burns Rally again.
Because Jimmy was playing it the other week, weren't he?
Yes, and I'd forgotten.
That game is incredible for its age. It's like the Assetto Corsa of rallying.
Yeah, I played that first time round on console, and it was phenomenally difficult, but very satisfying when you started getting it right. I didn't realise quite how much modding had been going into it, but it looks incredible now. So
when you consider that game came out in 2004,
yep,
and there's still a wide player base for that with incredible mods like that. Yep. You've got current WRC on there. It's really incredible what people managed to do to that game. And as Jimmy touched on, it's the only rally game where you have to consider the condition of your car. Like, yeah, if you hit a tree in Dirt Rally or WRC, you're gonna have like a bad time because your wheel's gonna be knocked out or something like that. But to the point of where your engine will overheat and the power will go down and stuff like that, and the water temperature will go up and the oil temperature and stuff like that, and it's all modeled within this game. Severely impressive, and I don't think a rally game has yet to capture that, and I don't know whether it will with Codemasters taking over the WRC license. I don't think that they will go to that level of realism. Which is a shame, because WRC 9, the WRC games for a long time were considered a bit too arcadey, and with the last two games they've really started to hit their stride, and it's a shame that that's been taken away by the license going to Cody's.
And the problem is, I really do feel that we'll end up with an F1 situation where we'll get a regurgitated game with very little interest in sort of the community support side of it, insofar as there are bugs in the latest F1 titles which haven't ever been dealt with. Which is a shame, because on the flip side, you've got titles like Dirt Rally 2, which had phenomenal support.
Yeah.
And are just utterly brilliant games, but never had that WRC license for it. It really, because interestingly, I think I read Dirtfish, which obviously has a big link in with Codemasters as well, bought, and also has a link in with WRC, apparently somehow, bought the license for doing all the promotion work and everything for promoting World Rallycross.
I believe it's the whatever company promotes WRC is now also promoting World Rallycross.
Yeah, which I think is something to do with Dirtfish.
Which I think is Dirtfish. Yeah, I think I read that as well. I'm not too well-versed in the rally stuff, but I think that's what I've seen as well.
But that's two... So two of those three things are already in a Dirt title, which is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And the third thing's coming next year. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So whether we get it or not, I don't know. I really, 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 really hope what we end up with is Dirt 3.0, which has World Rallycross license, has the WRC license, has the electric Rallycross, and I can't remember if it's either electric or hybrid WRC.
I believe it's hybrid at the moment.
Yeah.
I think.
So do you know what I mean? There's loads of scope for some pretty awesome...
There's a lot of potential there, absolutely.
Plus all the historical content and everything, like, all, you know, which they'll have... the license for. So yeah,
there's potential for it to work, and
I really hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. We mentioned Dirt Rally 2.0. We should briefly touch on a little bit of news for that title. You may remember that last September Dirt Rally 2.0 received its last content update.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Friday last week. It received its last planned patch update as well. So Dirt Rally 2.0 is now officially at end of life status, but it will still be there will still be the live events every week and stuff like that, but there will be no more patches or bug fixes for it unless something comes along and just utterly breaks it, I imagine. So yeah, that could also be gearing up to them starting to focus development on Dirt Rally 3.0, which is what I assume it will be, and maybe that will be the game that includes the WRC stuff. I believe Codemasters don't officially take over the license until 2023, but when you consider how long these games take to develop, maybe now is the time that they will start focusing on that.
I mean Big Ben might, not ours obviously,
not Ben,
might squeeze out one last WRC 10 end of this year, perhaps.
Yeah, I can assume that I can see them doing that, because yeah, there is enough time to do that, and when you consider that the progress between last year's game and this, or 2019's game and 2020's game, wasn't much, I could see them doing it again, but I can't see them making any major strides.
Well, no, but what will also be good is it will mean that they can perhaps provide a more optimized next gen console title, because they'd have had
yes,
a year or so,
that's very true.
Consoles, and also with the WRC esports stuff that's been going on a lot, really, behind the scenes, and we don't really sort of cover it that much. We really probably should cover it a little bit more. But they'll need something new for that. Otherwise, they'll suffer the same fate as Forza, and everyone gets a bit bored and don't want to do it.
Mm.
Anyway, moving forward, Forza coming to Steam in March, which is boring. A Hot Wheels car pack is also on its way. Okay.
I'm a little disappointed about that. Obviously,
care.
It's great that Horizon 4 is still getting supported. It is good to see that Forza, either through necessity or through choice, are choosing to support their games for longer than they did before. But
necessity.
As somebody who believes that Forza's greatest DLC pack was the Hot Wheels pack for Horizon 3, which included the tracks and everything, I'm a little sad that there isn't a new version of that with tracks and everything for Horizon 4. Because as much as I was sceptical of that Forza, that Horizon 3 DLC when they announced it, it was bloody fantastic.
I can't get excited about that. Sorry.
No, neither can I. Yeah, I haven't. Horizon 4 has kind of faded off my radar, to be honest, which is unfortunate because, in my view, it is the best of the Horizon titles.
Mm.
But
oh,
they haven't really done anything amazing to try and get people back. I think the move to Steam is a wise idea, because that will get a lot of people who otherwise were reluctant to get the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, this seems more like a, you know, the game's kind of faded off, how do we get more people in? Well, let's put it on Steam. Kind of like what EA did with Star Wars Battlefront 2, where they stopped supporting it, and then about a year later, they put it for free on a week on the Epic Games Store, and then it became the most popular it ever had been, which was kind of interesting. So yeah, I think that's all this really is just a way to try and get some more players and try and squeeze every last dollar out of what is a very good game.
Very true. Moving quickly on, because somehow we've managed to, well, I know exactly how we've managed to waste 49 minutes. Someone hasn't controlled my talking this week. iRacing, couple of little teases, really, isn't it? Because we've the Bristol Dirt Track, which we kind of knew about ish, got tweeted again with a picture of a digger on a track, which I thought was quite funny.
I'm so excited for that. Yeah. Bristol Dirt is going to be mental, both in real life and in the sim.
And a new late model.
Yes, this is particularly interesting because the sort of entry level paved oval racing content is getting a little bit old. It's getting quite aged. So iRacing tweeted a picture of their render of a super late model, specifically the Toyota model, I believe it is, by Five Star Bodies, which is a design and composite manufacturer in America that do all sorts of oval racing cars. I know a couple of friends of mine were quite excited and hoping that this would mean that there would also be an update for ARCA, considering that ARCA is one of the integral series that you have to do on iRacing to be able to get to Cup Series. It's the one that makes the most sense when you're going up the oval licenses. But it will be interesting to see. Yeah, this new super late model. I'll definitely be picking it up as an oval fan, and yeah, it'll be good to have an updated version. I hope they continue to do that, and that an updated ARCA car would be fantastic.
And we've got another update, another season 1 patch 5 update for iRacing, which brings a plethora of small changes by the looks of it.
One in particular, they're bringing in a brand new system status page, which details the current status of the various services and servers. I wonder why that might be. further down on the patch, on the release notes, it also seems to introduce a fix that could have potentially been the cause of the problems for the Daytona 24, whereby they have now said that while a race server is creating splits and sessions for an event, they will no longer accept new registrations. Previously, you could still join while the race server was doing this. So it seems as though we knew that there were problems with the scheduler back at Daytona, which is what splits people into their correct lobbies. It seems as though maybe that was the problem, that because that was taking a long time, it was allowing more and more people to sign up, and then it was just making the problem worse and worse. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we won't have this problem in the future. But Daytona, specifically the Daytona 24 event on iRacing, seems to be plagued every year. So we'll see next year.
It's that goofy meme, isn't it? I'll do it again.
Exactly. It's the Daytona curse.
Anyway, we need to move on to the... What are we calling this? I've forgotten.
Esports Roundup of the Week.
Not the... What did I say it should be called?
The sim racing with a bit of esports.
No, I want a jingle for Real Racing Series with a Sim Racing Series as well. News.
Oh, that's catchy. We'll get that to Tim. See what he can do.
Hang on. Real Racing Series with a Sim Racing Series 2.
If any of you are good at audio manipulation, can we isolate that, auto-tune it, and put it to something like German techno? Something like that. I'm feeling German techno music would be great for that. Send it to us at Simcast Radio, hashtag Simcast RSL. Yes, this week on esports, not actually that much. So no, this week it's sim racing with a little bit of esports, with a little bit of sim racing. I don't know what you said.
Two at the end of it.
Electric Boogaloo.
Oh.
Virtual GP concluded with its third and final race. This
I'm pretty sure if you phone the NHS, that's what you get these days, isn't it?
What? Oh.
Sorry.
I hate you. Virtual GP, yes, concluded with its final race in Brazil.
Hello, Dr. Russell. Yes, I have a terrible itch.
Can I mute you? As has been the case for the last 2 weeks, the event kicked off with the F1 esports drivers doing their little 5-lap race. Renault / Alpine, awkward because they haven't got their right livery. Alpine's driver, Nicolas Longuet, would earn pole position and would take the win. For, I think that's the third week in out of three where the pole sitter has taken the win, such is the quality of the field. And that isn't a detracting comment. Basically, they all qualified with exactly the same as their race pace because they're just machines. Brendan Lee would take second for Ferrari, once again kind of showing a little bit of a resurgence after a bit of disappointing last form. And Fabrizio Donoso would take third in the sprint race. This would put the French comedian Arnaud Samir on pole position, with Nicolas Prost having due to have started from third place for the feature race, but he didn't connect in time.
Oh,
that was a little bit embarrassing. For the first time, I think this season, lap one, turn one was utter chaos.
Unsurprising.
Such as so, George Russell, who started 14th, was third coming out of turn two.
Excellent.
And anyone who knows George Russell's ability with these games will know that that was kind of it from there. He took second by the end of lap one, took the lead the lap after that, and then only lost the lead during pit stop phases. He utterly dominated the race, and as such took his, I believe that was his fifth F1 virtual GP victory of the races he has taken part in. He missed a couple of them, but every the last five races he has done, he has won. And even more impressively, his pace would have put him just off of the grid of the F1 esports drivers who did the race before.
Brilliant.
And his fastest lap was on medium tyres at the end of the race. The man is an absolute machine on this game, and I find it disgusting when racing drivers are that good in real life and that good in the sim. Just let us have this. I got a little bit overcome there. I don't know what that was. So Russell would end up taking the win by about 6 seconds ahead of Enzo Fittipaldi. Alex Albon would take the final spot on the podium, with Enzo finishing in second and Pietro Fittipaldi finishing fifth. That would be enough for Haas to clinch the team's championship, which is basically the whole point of the virtual GP this season has been to raise money for charities. So each team nominated a charity, and then they would get a share of an $100,000 prize pot, with the highest placed teams getting more, the lowest placed teams getting less. So Haas took the team's title and thus earned $20,000 for the Grand Prix Trust, which is very good. I think it was FDA Esports, the Ferrari Driver Academy Esports team, finishing second in the standings, ahead of Williams in third. Elsewhere in the race, Dino Beganovic would take fourth for Ferrari, ahead of the aforementioned Pietro Fittipaldi. Arthur Leclerc would take sixth ahead of MotoGP's Jake Dennis, who was racing for Mercedes in seventh. The pole sitter Samir would take seventh ahead of Jimmy. Would take eighth rather, with Jimmy Broadbent finishing in ninth, and Luca Salvadori, his motorcycle racer, completing the points for AlphaTauri. That's it for Virtual GP. I think the next major F1 esports competition will be the F1 esports series, which will likely be in its usual spot around October. So a bit of a wait now.
And in the last few minutes of the show, let's quickly talk about Formula E Accelerate.
Eight
at the end of it. That'd be stupid.
So that was the third round of the season, I believe, from the Tempelhof circuit in Berlin. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Kevin Siggy, a BMW driver for BMW I Andretti, would take pole position and the win. Dragon Racing's Frederick Rasmussen would be basically the only rival for Siggy. He finished a couple of seconds off in the end, and the lead would change hands during their attack mode cycles, it was fairly comfortable for Siggy. You may remember from the last few weeks that the man who has been dominating this championship had been Erhan Jajowski for Venturi. He would only qualify down in ninth place, but he did recover to finish fourth, probably aided by the fact that Tempelhof is a bit more of an easier track to overtake on when you compare it to places like Hong Kong and New York, which are very difficult. So that now means that Jajowski is leading the championship by 9 points over Kevin Siggy, and Andretti are leading the team standings by 12 points over Venturi. The Formula E Accelerate Series will be off for the next month or so, with Formula E in real life returning for the Diria race, the doubleheader. I think it's at the end of this month, in about a week or so. Interestingly, whilst they're there, the team's championship points that are scored in real life will be added to the Formula E Accelerate team's championship.
Of course they are.
So, because, yeah, everything needs to be merged, apparently, to even when it's not, doesn't really make sense. So, yeah, the Formula E Accelerate team's championship will return on Thursday, March 11th, at the virtual Diria Street Circuit. So not exactly a month, a little bit less. And yeah, by then the team's championship might look very different with the real teams factored in.
There we go. And the only thing missing from all that series would be a supporting Jaguar I-Pace race.
That'd be cool. I'm surprised that they haven't actually brought that in for R-Factor 2. That would make a lot of sense. Those cars are quite cool. I like them.
They are very cool.
Same, they have quite small grids, but quite exciting.
Yeah, and that is the end of another show. I know. Ben and Lewis will be back with you next week. I've been Matt Hunter. Jordan has been somehow keeping it together.
Externally.
This week... Cue the music.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.